Well, good morning. This is our last time to look for Waldo. This time we're going to look for Waldo in joy. Actually, this is an easier picture of Waldo coming up. So perhaps you can find him quickly. This one is joy in the midst of heartache. Heartache implies great loss. And with great loss, there's grief. And how we walk through that grief will impact our heart. And it will impact our ability to love. Grief is difficult to experience. Joy is not one of the things that we typically think about in the midst of great loss. Grief is a time of great sadness and loss. Sometimes it's overwhelming sadness and overwhelming loss. In the midst of intense pain, it's difficult to imagine ever experiencing joy again. In one of my own dark moments of grief, I was reading Psalm 86, and it came to verse 4, and it says, "Bring joy to your servant, for to you, O Lord, I lift up my soul." I wept. Joy? How can I ever experience joy when I've just lost the most precious person in my life? Joy is gone. Furthermore, to even try to imagine joy without my wife there seemed empty and void of real joy. I just couldn't imagine it. Yet I prayed, "Lord, I want to experience joy that comes from you. Bring joy to your servant." I cried more deeply through the prayer because I didn't even see joy as a possibility. Well, grief is not only difficult to experience, it's difficult to be around. It's very difficult to be around someone in deep grief. It makes many of us uncomfortable, partly because we don't want those we love to be in pain, and partly because being in the presence of grief nudges us towards our own pain that we would like to avoid. So often, a well-meaning person will try to say something or do something to try to pull the grieving pain out of the pain into joy. I recently heard about a 15-year-old boy, it was actually on the news, who lost both of his parents to death. And he went to live with his grandparents. And his grandmother said, "I cry every day. I try not to cry in front of him because I want him to be happy." She didn't want her grandson to feel the pain. She just wanted him to be happy. And we often want to pull someone out of grief into joy. We've all heard words that were meant to help, like, "She's in a better place now." And you know she wouldn't want you to be sad. Well, he had a great life. You were lucky to have him for as long as you did. Just cherish the moments and be grateful. Or you can't dwell on the loss. You have to get on with your life. There may be some truth to those statements, but they do little to bring comfort. They're usually said in an attempt to pull someone out of the grief in an effort to make them feel better. At other times, well-meaning friends may see your grief, your tears, and they just change the subject. They try to talk about something more pleasant. The message is, don't let it impact you too much. Just focus on something more positive and less painful. Still, at other times, friends might try to distract us with activities in the hope that we won't feel the pain so deeply. It is important to live life and be involved in both meaningful ways and even fun ways. Life does go on. But to use activities to pull someone out of grief and into joy is the wrong path. It seeks to pull away from deeply feeling the impact of the loss. Grief will change you. It will either change you in a direction of having a more calloused and numb heart, or it will change you in the direction of having a more tender and loving heart. Grief is not neutral. Grief is unavoidable. Grief is something that we will all face many times in our life. In my life, I have known and loved a lot of people who have died. I've lost friends, acquaintances, grandparents, mom, dad, aunts, uncles, cousins, teachers, students, co-workers, neighbors, and the most grievous to me, my wife of 45 years. Grief comes many times in life. The loss of my mom as a young boy and the loss of my wife of over 45 years were by far the most impacting for me. And even those two losses were very different from each other. Am I running out of battery? Something changed. We have all experienced and will experience grief. And while there are similarities in grief, each loss is unique to the person experiencing it because each relationship is different. Grief doesn't have a time limit. Not only is each person's grief unique, grief doesn't end. It changes as time goes on, but there will always be the ache of the loss of someone that was very precious to you. I've often compared it to an amputation. There is a kind of healing that comes after an amputation, but a precious part of you will always be gone and will never return. A few months ago, I was speaking in Unalakleet, and a friend who grew up there was also speaking, and he shared about his father dying when he was 7 years old. And although he had returned to Unalakleet many times, on this particular time, he described that he felt very blessed because he had his whole family there. And on this occasion, they made a trip out to the cemetery where his father was buried. And he reminisced and told stories with his kids about his father. He said there were a lot of tears as he remembered both his dad and his loss. And then he said, that was 41 years ago. Grief doesn't end. We learn to live with the loss being part of our life. I could identify with my friend. My mom died when I was 13. My mom was the most important person in my life. That was over 56 years ago. And I can still experience tears as I remember Mom and the remembers and memories that I have of her. I miss her. Grief continues, but it's not the same as it was when I was hit with the shock of her death as a 13-year-old. Well, when catastrophic loss hits, it rocks our world and threatens to dismantle any hope of ever experiencing meaningful life again. 4 years ago, I was again hit with the shock of overpowering loss. And I'm going to share a part of that journey with you in the hopes that we can see a path of experiencing joy in the midst of heartache. Joy and pain simultaneously. Not pulling someone out of joy, out of pain to get to the joy, but rather joy and pain together. We need eyes to see joy in the midst of pain. It's a path that's fully honest with the loss and willing to feel the ache of that loss while simultaneously moving ahead in life with energy and purpose. It can lead us to the heart of God. It was the summer of 2016. Many of you know the story. Karen and I were starting on an exciting new adventure of RVing together. And it was a dream that Karen had, and she was so happy that she was almost giddy for weeks, months, as we were preparing to do this. And we downsized, got rid of all of our possessions, down to what would fit in the motorhome, and we drove out of Alaska to Colorado, where our motorhome was waiting at my daughter's. And the week after we arrived, we went to the mountains with my kids and grandkids and my son-in-law's mom. And we went to pick raspberries. We found a great wild raspberry patch. And it was on the way home that we were talking, laughing, and just enjoying each other. And all of a sudden, Karen let out a scream as a large white truck was racing toward us at high speed. A young man was distracted on his phone and ran through the stop sign at high speed. Karen's scream was only half a scream because it was cut short by the violent impact. When everything stopped, the Jeep was on its side in the ditch of the road that the truck was traveling, a significant distance from the road that we were traveling on. And the first thing that I realized as we were on the side, the Jeep was on its side, was that my wife's lifeless body was hanging over me from her seatbelt and shoulder harness as the blood was flowing out of her head onto me. And I quietly called her name, and there was no response. I was aware that I had two hurting and traumatized kids in the back seat. Little Willa started screaming out in fear and pain, and I couldn't even turn enough to see her, let alone help her. And Lily, my granddaughter, was sitting behind me, and she had a very clear view of Grandma's lifeless body. And she called out in a clear and strong voice, and she said, "Grandpa, are you okay?" And it hurt that I couldn't reassure, because I knew I wasn't okay. Somehow I managed to get my cell phone out of my pocket and call my daughter, who was driving home from the raspberry patch with her husband, son, and mother-in-law. They were a few miles ahead of us. I don't remember all that I said, but I remember telling Heather that we were just in a terrible car accident, and I didn't know if Mom was alive. I managed to undo the seatbelt and crawl out the window. And my kids and my grandson were some of the first on the scene. When my daughter arrived, she promptly squatted down and held my hand as I sobbed for my wife, who I knew wasn't going to live. After what seemed to be a very long time, we were eventually transferred by ambulance to the hospital. My wife was flown to the trauma hospital in Denver, while I remained in the Alamosa hospital. And after 2 days in ICU, I was released early so that I could go be with my wife. She died of her injuries 9 days later. She never regained consciousness. The pain was excruciating as I held her hand and watched her take her last breath. The heartache is beyond what most people can comprehend. I tried to get the words out, but I kept choking them on them as I tried to say them. And in very faltering words, I said, "Karen, you're free to go to Jesus now. I will miss you so much, but it's time to go. I love you." While driving home from the raspberry patch on August 6th, 2016, my life changed in an instant from feeling pleasure and enjoyment to feeling excruciating pain and heartache. Joy and excitement changed to intense pain and loss. Walking through the loss is not a smooth or gentle process. It feels like being tossed around by violent waves in a fierce storm. Wave after wave of loss badgered me relentlessly, and I often felt very alone and even helpless in the process. It reminded me of an experience a few years back when I was with two friends in an open skiff on the ocean, and we were traveling through a fog-necked strait between Kodiak Island and a Fognak Island. And this was my first time through Whale Passage. And Whale Passage is known for its unusually strong and violent currents. And it was a relatively calm day as we were passing through. And one of my friends turned to me and he said, "Notice what happens to the boat when we pass through the whirlpools." And we were going all along, and we could see the whirlpools coming. And as we got to them, we were in this open skiff with a big motor on back, and we hit the whirlpools, and the boat just jerked to one side, and we go a little bit further, and it jerked the other way. And we go a little bit further, and it jerks again. And it kept jerking back and forth. It was very powerful. But we passed through the whirlpools and started going straight again. And we got to Raspberry Island and spent a few hours there. And the skipper of the boat kept looking off in the distance. And he said, "We've got to get off the mountain and get back. There's a storm coming." And you could see it. It was a cloud bank, and you could just see it moving this way. And it was moving rather rapidly. So we scrambled off the mountain, got in the skiff, and started back. But the storm was moving in pretty fast. and the waves began to build up. And what made them even bigger was the current was going, or the tide was going one way, and the waves, the wind was going the other way, and it piled the waves higher. And we're in this open skiff and going through those waves, and pretty soon the waves are way bigger than our little skiff. And it was scary. But then we got to the whirlpools. And when we got to the whirlpools, the waves were not coming in one direction. They were coming from all directions. And we were trying to watch where the next wave was coming from and turn the boat into it. And then where's the next one coming from? You turn the boat into that. And trying to keep from being swamped from the side. And we were doing that, and all of us were watching. Well, this over here. And we turned that way. And pretty soon, the skipper of the boat turned to the other two of us and said, I don't know what to do anymore. It was a very sickening feeling. And we just continued to try to turn into him to keep from getting swamped. And pretty soon, we got past the whirlpools, and the waves started to straighten out again. And we could just take them on one at a time. It was still very scary. But at last, we had the hope of reaching the shore. Because while we were in the midst of it, we all felt that we were going to perish. We didn't have any hope of getting through that. That experience is not unlike my grief experience. It's scary, and it leaves a sickening feeling in the pit of my stomach. I sometimes feel helpless and wonder if I'll ever see calm waters and blue sky in my future. Even though I believe there is still purpose and meaning ahead, I sometimes found it very difficult to see past the lonely, helpless, and hopeless places that kept coming in unpredictable waves from unpredictable directions. We'll see in the path. As soon as my heart was crushed by the loss of Karen, I knew that I needed to face my loss completely and not distract myself from the pain. I needed to feel whatever emotion came up and experience it fully. I knew that. I needed to let it tell me deeper things about my loss and deeper things about me. I shared with some of you before that I pictured it like a path. I pictured a ditch on each side of that path. And on one side, it was a ditch of distractions. Distractions meant to pull me away from feeling the depth of my grief. And anything could be used as a distraction from feeling the pain. But I knew that I must not give in to the distractions. It didn't mean that I didn't live life and do things. It simply meant that I tried not to let them be a distraction that pulled me away from feeling my loss. On the other side, I pictured a ditch of self-pity. It could be very tempting to dive into the ditch of self-pity. Both ditches lead away from facing and feeling the full impact of the loss. I knew that I needed to stay on the path. And it meant lots of tears for many months. Actually, years. But I knew what I needed to do. In addition to knowing what I needed to do, I also had clarity on why I needed to do it. The reason I need to stay on the path and feel the impact of my loss is because I want my heart to be free, to both give and receive love. And if I try to keep the ache of the loss away from my heart, I would at best numb my heart a little bit to feeling the loss. At worst, I would harden my heart and it would become calloused. The damage that results is that I cannot give or receive love with a numb or calloused heart. In order for my heart to remain tender, I must be willing to feel the ache of the loss and grieve it. It is more about having a tender heart that is free to love than it is about whom to love. It's about having a tender heart that's free to love whomever God brings to my path. It might be a friend, it might be a family member, or it might be the clerk at the grocery store. It always involves being free to receive love from God and love Him in return. And my love for God always involves the way that I relate to others and love others. Jesus said it clearly when He said, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." And then He followed up and said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." The way that I show my love to God is by the way that I love others. And I cannot love others the way God is calling to me if my heart is numb or calloused. So my path is clear. But that doesn't mean it's easy, nor is it painless. It's just clear. I know what I need to walk, and I know why I need to walk it. I don't like it, but I have direction and purpose in the midst of heartbreaking loss. As I began to walk the painful journey of grief, I sometimes wrote a little about my thoughts and what it was like for me. This is what I wrote one day. I just read Psalm 6. David wrote, "I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with my weeping. My eye wastes away because of grief." Even though the source and the circumstances of David's grief was very different from the source of my grief, David, through poetry, entered deeply into the experience of feeling the ache of the loss. David was willing to feel the full impact of his grief. He didn't stuff it, and he didn't try to quickly distract himself from feeling it. He entered his grief, and he felt it fully. And then he thought about it enough to be able to describe it in poetic words, what it was like for him. A few months after Karen's death, I wrote this. "It is now 8 months since Karen died. I weep every day. I still sob every day. How long will I cry like this? Yet I know I must be willing to feel deeply whatever I happen to feel. I don't want to stuff my grief. I don't want my heart to become hardened or calloused. And I don't want to get stuck in self-pity. I must be willing to feel the ache whenever it comes." I just reread the account of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. When Jesus heard about the death of Lazarus, he was deeply moved. He felt the full impact of the grief. He didn't say, "Well, you know, he's in a better place now." Nor did he say, "He's dancing in heaven now." He didn't say, "Don't cry, I'll raise him from the dead. He saw Mary's grief and he wept. Prior to the verse that says he wept, when Jesus heard about the death of Lazarus, the phrase that stuck out to me as I was reading it this time was, Jesus was deeply moved. Jesus let the rawness of that moment impact him, and he was deeply moved. It's a few verses later, the words that we're all familiar with, Jesus wept. And moments later, when Jesus came to the tomb where they had laid Lazarus, it says that Jesus was again deeply moved. When someone is deeply moved, you know it. There's no hiding it. Jesus was deeply moved. Why are we so prone to spit out platitudes in the presence of grief? I think it's because we as a society have become uncomfortable with death, grief, and pain. We want to make it better so we don't have to grieve. We are unacquainted with grief. Isaiah 53 tells us that Jesus was acquainted with grief. He didn't spit out platitudes, nor did he stuff his grief. He saw their grief and was deeply moved. He entered their grief with them, and he grieved. This is Jesus, the one who knows something about resurrection. He was about to resurrect Lazarus from the dead in just a few minutes. This is Jesus, the one who said that he was going to rise from the dead and conquer death. This is Jesus, the one who gives us hope of resurrection because he rose from the dead. This is Jesus. He is the resurrection. And when Jesus met his friends who had just lost their friend and brother to death, he was deeply moved. Jesus entered the grief and grieved with them. In my own grief, the ones who helped me the most are the ones who saw my grief, and they were deeply moved. They didn't try to pull me out of my grief or soften it by saying, Karen is in a better place now. Even though it's true, she is in a better place. They simply grieved with me. They were present with me. They were with me in my grief. People who are with me in my grief help me to get a glimpse of the heart of God. God sees my grief, and he's moved with compassion. He knows my pain. That is comforting. I am not alone in my grief. It helped me to feel the full impact of the loss and let the tears flow. And when I did not censor the rawness of what I felt with friends who cared to hear it all, I sensed just a small sense of the heaviness of it being just lifted just a little bit. It still hurt deeply, but it was just a little bit lighter than experiencing it completely alone. The experience of people who reached out and grieved with me touched my heart. And sometimes I didn't know what to say, but that's okay. It's a person's presence that touches the deepest. Their presence of entering the grief with me and the presence of them caring. It's contrasted with people who didn't know what to say, but tried to distract me from the grief or pull me out of the grief. Some changed the subject, Others gave platitudes that were meant to ease the pain. And some of the platitudes were even true. But they did little to bring comfort. They were said to lessen or distract from grief rather than enter into grief with me. Tears were another subject of difficulty. Sometimes people think if they see lots of tears, it means the person is not doing very well. How often have we heard someone ask about someone who's just experienced a loss and they say, how are they doing? And we hear an answer like, well, I think they're holding up pretty well. Meaning, he's not crying too much. We're often uncomfortable with tears. I remember as a young boy when Mom had a heart attack and we were on vacation. We were at Niagara Falls. And after staying at the Salvation Army for a few days, Dad took my brother and me home to Minnesota and left Mom at the hospital. And as we were walking down the hall, leaving Mom's room, my brother and I were fighting back tears. And then my brother turned and he looked up at Dad and he pointed at his eyes and he said, you too. He saw tears in Dad's eyes. Dad usually hid his tears in an attempt to be strong for his boys. Tears were seen as weakness. I wonder how many times as a child I heard, stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. Tears are not an indication of weakness, nor are they an indication that we're not okay. Tears don't come in neat categories either. Sometimes the tears are tears of heartache and loss. Sometimes they're tears of gratitude for the relationship I had. Sometimes they're tears of gratitude for the love and care of friends. And sometimes it's even tears of joy. And to complicate things further, sometimes the tears are a mixture of all of the above happening at the same time. To the observer, they can't tell what the tears are about unless they enter in and find out. They can all look pretty much the same. But tears are not an indication that the person is not doing well. Jesus was deeply moved and he had tears. It was an expression of his love and care for his friends. It was a gift. In addition, being with the person with tears can help them explore what the tears are about. Sometimes it's confusing and we can't even tell because it's so many things all mixed together. In the journey of grief, one of the questions that was challenging for me was, how are you? There were times when it was said by someone who was not really there with me. And they said, how are you? At those times, something inside of me wanted to fire back in anger and say, how do you think I am? I just lost the most precious person to me in my life. Do you want me to just be okay? But instead of lashing out, I simply said something like, some moments are better than others. However, that same question, how are you, when said by someone who I knew genuinely cared, was meaningful. I then would sometimes just spill out what I was feeling and thinking and speak through my tears. If I erred, I probably erred on the side of letting all the rawness of what I was experiencing just come blubbering out. I knew that I didn't want to hold back and suppress my emotions because I didn't want the damage that stuffing would do to my heart. The grief process is tumultuous. It's unpredictable. It's unsettling. And at times, overwhelming. So where's the joy? Where's Waldo? Can you find Waldo on that picture? Nobody's found them yet? Oh, there we got some. How many see where Waldo is? Okay, go point it out for the rest of them. Can you explain where he's at?
The towel, the blue horizontal
towel in the center. Yep, that's right. Right above that, there he is. Well, where is joy in the midst of heartache? We have to look intently for it. It's hidden in the midst of heartache. And I'm going to share several places of joy that surprised me. First of all, is the joy of being loved by God and others. Shortly after the accident, a friend set up Caring Bridge so that others could follow what was happening and leave responses for me to read. It was immensely meaningful to me. I had a very difficult time trying to talk with anybody because when I opened my mouth to say something, I'd just start to sob. But I wanted people to know, and I wanted to hear from people. So Caring Bridge became a lifeline to me. My friend could keep people posted, and I could read the responses of people as they left messages. After I was released from ICU at the Alamosa Hospital, my son-in-law drove me in my motorhome to the parking lot of the hospital where Karen was, so that I could spend time with her. They released me early, and I ended up back in an emergency room once Karen died, because all the focus was on her, and mine was too. But I would spend the day with Karen at her side. And then at night, I would slowly and painfully work my way back to the motorhome. It was difficult physically because I had numerous injuries, including multiple broken ribs, many deep bruises internally and externally from head, chest, groin, both legs, both knees, both ankles. So getting to the motorhome and trying to get into bed was a real challenge. And once I was in bed, it was hard just to turn a little bit or to reach. And I had my cell phone right beside me. And just every few minutes, I would try to turn and reach that cell phone. And I would look to see if someone had posted on Caring Bridge. It was painful just to reach to get the cell phone, but it was a lifeline to me. And I'd usually find new posts there, and I'd read them and just cry. But those tears were tears of gratitude for the love and care of those reaching out to me. I felt very loved by others, and I felt loved by God. I was grateful. you see, had not always experienced feeling very loved by others or by God. I knew that I was wanted by a lot of people, but I felt I was wanted for what I could do for them rather than for just me. So I struggled with not feeling very loved. And that included not feeling God's love very deeply. Oh, I knew that He loved me, but it didn't penetrate very deeply, and I longed to experience His love. One day, many years ago, I was sitting in my office after a long day of counseling, and I picked up my Bible and I began to read in Psalm 142, and this is what I read. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaint before Him. Before Him I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is You who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. And then I came to this verse. Look to my right and see. No one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I identified with the psalm at that time. Look to my right and see. No one is concerned for me. No one cares for my life. I had tears as I was reading that psalm, and just then the phone rang. And it was a pastor friend, and I often got calls from pastor friends and assumed that they were calling to either make a referral or to perhaps talk through some difficult situation. I got a lot of those calls. And he said, I just called to let you know that I love you. And we chatted for a while. And we talked for several minutes. And as we were getting ready to hang up, I said, so why'd you call? And he replied, I had no reason except to call and say I wanted to tell you that I love you. I wept again because I realized that God had heard my struggle and prompted this friend to call just at the perfect time. My realization that I am loved deeply by God has grown immensely over the years. I know that I'm loved by God, and I know that I'm loved by many others, and it penetrates very deeply. So when the accident happened, so many people reached out to me, I felt deeply loved. Deeply loved by people and deeply loved by God. My heart was filled with gratitude, and I experienced the joy of knowing that I'm loved. And in the midst of it was in the midst of excruciating pain and heartache. It wasn't joy after heartache. It was joy in the midst of heartache. There's also the joy of precious memories. I am grateful for the many memories of rich times with Karen that we shared together. We walked through many adventures and challenges together, and in the process, we changed and grew. And as a result, the last years of our marriage were especially rich. I look back on them with fondness and joy. But as I reflect on those memories, they too are in the midst of heartache. Then there's the joy of others being with me. I am not alone. At the conclusion of the memorial service for Karen at Community Covenant Church in Eagle River, Pastor Mark made a few comments just before he dismissed the people. And he said, I just looked out at the people there, and he said, "It's not good for man to be alone." I choked and nearly burst into sobs. Those words penetrated a deep place in my heart. It's not good to be alone. And I just lost the one who was always with me. Mark was reminding others that it's important to be with me. Ultimately, it brings me to the greater realization that God has promised that he would never leave me. I am not alone. He is with me. Yet at the moment, it feels like I am all alone. I have lost forever the one I most wanted to be with. The people who saw my grief and were deeply moved were the ones that I felt were really with me. And it brought a measure of joy in the midst of heartache. I said that Karen and I were embarking on an adventure of RVing together. And part of that adventure was to visit several national parks. And when you see the beauty of nature, it's just natural to say, "Wow, look at that." Just like looking out the window there. But when Karen died, I would see beauty, and my first impulse would be to say something like, "Wow, look at that." And she wasn't there. I lost interest in going to some of those places because it was so painful to be so aware that she wasn't there to enjoy and share it with. Gradually, I did regain a desire to see some of those places. But I was keenly aware that sharing the experience with others was vastly more meaningful than seeing it alone. There's many times that friends invited me to do activities or go to events with them. And it reminded me that even though I lost the one that I most wanted to be with, I was not alone. Others were with me. And those who were with me reminded me of God's promises. "I will never leave you or forsake you. I am always with you." And then there's this joy of seeing my heart grow in tenderness and care. Peter wrote about being filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. It's in 1 Peter 1:8. The joy that he was writing about was joy because of the hope that we have in Jesus. And he went on to say that even though we, and here's his words, suffer grief in all kinds of trials, these trials are strengthening and deepening our faith, and that is cause of deep joy. I was pleasantly surprised to see how my heart has remained tender and has perhaps even grown in tenderness. It was a desire that I didn't know if it would be there or not. So I was very grateful when I saw it. It brought joy to my heart, knowing that God is continuing to work in my heart. In some of my most painful moments, I had this clear awareness that I wasn't the only one in this world who was hurting. Yes, I was hurting, but so were a lot of other people. And when I would hear about specific situations where someone was experiencing loss and grief, I had a strong desire well up inside of me to be with them. My heart swelled with compassion. I wanted to enter their pain and walk with them. I even caught myself smiling and saying, "Thank you, Jesus." I experienced the joy of my heart remaining tender. And then there's the joy of seeing hard times produce maturity. James chapter 1 says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the test in your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Pure joy? Not joy that we have to face trials, but joy for what the experience can produce in us. It can help to make us mature and complete. The things that produce heartache can also produce growth and maturity. And then there's the joy of present relationship. Another source of joy was meeting Jody, who's now my wife. I was literally surprised by joy to meet Jody. I was on a motorhome trip from Arizona to Alaska with three other motorhomes. We were caravanning together. And I had a specific focus as we were going from Arizona to California to Oregon to Washington and on up. My focus was connecting with people that I've known for a long period of time. And naturally, most of them from Alaska, but had moved out. And so we would go, and I'd spend a couple days with someone, this person or that person, and just reconnect with friends along the way. I knew I needed to be in relationship with people. And as we were going from place to place, we crossed from Oregon into Washington, and I called a friend of mine who was a dentist in Anchorage for years, and I'd known him for many years. In fact, I told my daughter I was going to go see him, and her response was, "Oh, say hi to my second mom." So my kids and her kids spent a lot of time together. And so I called him up, and I said, "When is your church, and where is it located, and when does it start?" I said, "I'm going to come see you." And he told me, and so I went to see them, and I got there early, and he met me at the door, and he immediately started introducing me to people. And I was surprised at the number of people that he introduced me to that said, "Oh, do you know so-and-so?" And I said, "Well, yes, I do." And there's just a number of people, and I'd never been in Washington before, but there were a number of people that I was introduced to that knew people that I'd known from up here for years. And then he said, "There's someone else I want you to meet." And she was across the room, and we walked across the room to introduce me to Jody. And we talked a little bit. And then Bill said to Jody, "Are you going to lunch with us?" And she said, "Yes, I am." And there's a story behind that that we can find out details later. But we ended up going out to lunch together. And six of us had a very pleasant lunch together. And I happened to sit right across from Jody. We're both from Alaska, so what do you talk about? Who do you know? And we were surprised at the number of people that had known both of us for over 40 years, but we had never met. And we realized that we've been in the exact same places many times, but never met each other. So we had a very pleasant lunch. But the next day, I started wondering, was this a setup? So I called my friend Bill, and I asked him, I said, "Hey, Bill, How did the people who went to lunch yesterday happen to be there? And we talked about it, and pretty soon he says, oh, I can see how that might have felt like a setup. Later that day, he texted me, and this is what he wrote. Larry, I've been reflecting a bit on yesterday's lunch and our conversation this morning. Upon reflection, I realize it had every evidence of being a setup. I want to assure you that that thought never really entered my mind. You mentioned that you felt blindsided, and that makes me think that we might have imposed unwanted expectations on you and perhaps on Jody as well. Again, those thoughts hadn't occurred to me, and my apologies if you felt any undue pressures. However, all of that said, I have to say it was a uniquely coincidental circumstance. For our part, we're happy to facilitate a friendship between you and Jody. But all joking aside, we would never assume to be matchmakers. We'll leave that arrangement to the Lord. I responded with this text. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate your reflective thoughts. I so appreciate heart honesty and genuine connection. And I didn't feel like there were unwanted expectations imposed on me. It was just a surprise. I want to meet new people and make new friends. I appreciate meeting all the people you introduced me to. While it was a surprise to me to meet Jody and have lunch together, it was also an unexpected delight. I was surprised by joy. I was literally surprised by joy to meet Jody. She's a very special woman who's walked a very similar journey over the past few years. She lost her husband suddenly less than a year before Karen died. We're walking our journey before God together. It doesn't take away the heartache of loss from either of us, but it brings deep sweetness in the midst of the pain in our journey of life. We share grief together when the unexpected waves come. We enter into the grief. We cry with each other and we move on and we enjoy a very special sweetness. We're not alone in our grief. Pain and joy walk together. We also share the joy of reaching out to others together. But then there's another joy. There's the joy of future hope. It's the hope of heaven. We have hope of seeing our loved ones again. 1 Thessalonians 4 tells us that our grief is not like others who do not have the hope of heaven, because we will see those who have died and gone before us. Not only do we have the hope of seeing our loved ones again, but heaven is a place of perfect relationships, unending joy, and no more pain. So there's lots of sources of joy in the midst of heartache, but we have to find them, and we have to look for them. Where's Waldo? Where's joy in the midst of heartache? Look for it. Look intently for it. It's there. Joy for the past, joy in the present, and joy for the hope that we have in the future. But remember, we must look for it in the midst of heartache. Don't wait for it to be in the place of heartache. It's in the midst of heartache. Well, I've shared a little bit about my grief, but I want each of you to know that the most important grief to walk through is your own. My grief is weighty and substantial to me, but I have to remember that with Karen's death, I'm not the only one with significant loss. My children grieve. My grandkids grieve. Many dear friends of Karen grieve. And each relationship was different. And each person grieves differently. The loss is different for every person. So even with one death, many grieve. And each one who grieves, grieves differently. The relationship was different. And each of you have experienced significant loss, and you will hear it as you share with each other parts of your stories. The thing that I want to stress loud and clear is the worst kind of grief is your own. It's different from everyone else's grief, even if it results from the same loss and death. So comparing one person's grief to another misses the point. It's unproductive in the healing process. Each of us has to walk the journey of identifying and facing our own loss. My loss of my precious wife is the most difficult loss for me to face. Your loss is the most difficult loss for you to face. Each loss is different, and we must walk the journeys that are our own loss.